Hi, this is Kevin Williams with Positivity Plus, and I'm actually here with my wife, Keely.
Hi.
And yep, so that was an exciting introduction. Actually, we've been married for 37 years yesterday. And, you know, for me, you know, if you look back at 37 years, you think, wow, it's probably been a pretty good life. We really haven't had many, I guess, difficult times. Although that depends on who you are. I guess, you know, with me going to work all the time, I probably miss out on all those challenges. But Keely's at home and, of course, in the midst of in the trenches, you know, with all the kids. But our kids are all grown up now, and we actually have 8 grandchildren, and one's on the way. So we'll have 9 in December. So the question is we're thinking about, all right, what do we talk about today? And one of the things that my wife brought up, Keely, was, you know, her family actually has gone through a lot of, you know, difficult experiences through their lives. And fortunately, they've kind of all survived. Like all these different tragedies that happen, you think, all right, something bad is going to come out of it, but actually a lot of good has come out of it. So I'm going to, Keely's like, you know, going to be the main person on this today. She doesn't know this until right this moment. But, you know, we'll start actually with the first experience, which would be what? Your sister. So why don't you, the first one? So why don't you talk about your sister? I guess she was at college at the time, but you weren't at college, right?
It was actually her second year. Uh-huh. And it was, I was living about 30 minutes away from where she was going to college.
Okay.
She was going to college in Idaho. And she, I was going to college with her. We were both together, living in the same apartment. We were roommates. And she and 2 other kids from our hometown had decided to go back to California and for homecoming, for high school homecoming. And so they were just getting ready to leave town, and they were going around a corner, and a potato truck was coming around the same corner, and the tire axle broke on the potato truck and hit my sister on the driver's side of her car. She had a brand new Mustang, and it hit her side, ripped the trunk right off of her car. She was injured, and obviously this was a time when nobody wore a seatbelt and we didn't have airbags. So she hit her head against the steering wheel, and I remember them calling me from the hospital, and I went up there, and she had hit her head against the steering wheel, and she ended up with 40 stitches in her head. They had to do stitches on the inside and then stitches on the outside. But she had a ruptured spleen, and they had to take her to the next town to do surgery and remove her spleen.
So when did your dad and your parents find out? Because they're in California.
Actually, I called them from the hospital and told them. And my mom got a flight from California and flew up. My dad stayed home because he owned his own business.
Right.
And so he stayed home and my mom flew up that day.
Okay, so did he come later?
No.
Oh, he never came up.
He never came.
I had no idea.
Yeah, because I think my mom had kind of said, you know what, it's going to be okay. She's looking really good. The doctors are saying that things are good, so I think you're okay to stay home.
Okay, so then how did things progress at the hospital? So she thought everything was going to be fine. And do you know why she thought that?
Well,
just because of the doctors?
Doctors kind of told her that it would be okay. The interesting thing about all of that is that she had that accident, and then 6 months later,
right,
she had her next accident, which was a whole lot worse and a whole lot more serious than that one was.
Okay, so what happened with the second accident? So the first one, I guess, everything worked out fine because she ends up being fine and then 6 months. So when was this thing about the toilet paper?
That was actually the next accident.
Okay, so we'll get to that just out of curiosity. Yeah, just it's kind of like a funny little story within the tragedy. Yeah. That's happening. So your sister survives being hit by a potato truck.
Yes.
And then six months later, she has another accident. Yes. And this one's with just another vehicle?
She actually was walking across a crosswalk.
Okay.
And was hit by a pickup that was driving about 45 miles an hour.
Does your sister have a death wish?
You know, it would kind of make you wonder, wouldn't it?
So what happened with the second accident?
And she was actually crossing the street. It was about sunset.
Right.
And one car had stopped for them to go across a four-lane road, but the next car didn't see her.
Oh.
And she kind of darted out in the crosswalk to hurry up and get across the street. And
so was the guy drunk?
He was an older man. I think he was probably in his 70s.
Okay.
And he hit her going, like I said, about 45 miles an hour.
Wow.
And didn't realize, I think.
So did she fly in the air, under the truck?
She flew through the air, they said, about 60 to 80 feet and landed on her head. So she was.
So you had 40 stitches previously from the first one. And now this one, she landed on her head. So did they stitch her up again? Or?
Well, she had severe head trauma.
Right.
So
that still continues today, right?
I know.
Actually, she's fine, but sometimes we just tell her she had head trauma. Okay.
But she had severe head trauma. We took the person that she was with called my parents and told them that she had been injured. The funny thing is I was living about 30 miles away this time, and I didn't have a phone.
No cell phone at the time.
So my parents called my uncle, and my uncle came to my apartment and told me, and my uncle and I went to the hospital with my
boyfriend.
And
this is Val.
Yes, my uncle.
Okay, Uncle Val.
We get to the hospital, and the doctor basically tells me if she makes it through the night, then we'll reevaluate her in the morning. And I thought, I'm 19 years old. And
were
I
you
have
19?
To, I was 19.
So this is the second accident in 6 months, and you're 19. And your sister's, both times, you're not sure, of course.
Yeah. But I had to call my parents and
let them know.
And so I thought, I'm not going to tell them what he just said. How can you tell your parents that? You can't tell your parents that when they're, 1,600 miles away. You can't tell them that. So I called them and said, just get here when you can. It'll be okay. We'll take care of her. And my uncle got on the phone and said, you better get here because it doesn't look good.
So this is when they both,
came. Yes, they both came.
Because they really thought that, this might be it.
Yes.
So what are you thinking as you're going through this? You're at the hospital. She's hit by another vehicle, flies in the air. Was there stuff in her hair or something
actually there was blood all over her hair.
Right.
And it was funny because my sister had really long, beautiful hair. And the first thing that I thought of was where they cut her hair was they shaved a big portion off the side of her head. And I thought, oh man, she's going to be so mad when she wakes up and sees this big bald spot in the middle of her head.
Right. She's ready about dying and you're worried that she's going to wake up in a bald spot.
Yeah. So after about a week and a half, she started to come around and started to wake up.
Okay. So from a Christian perspective, did anybody come in and to give her a blessing, as we would call it?
I will just tell you, that night,
This is the night after the accident?
The night of the accident. Mm-hmm. I stayed with her all night long in the hospital. She was in the intensive care unit, and I stayed with her all that night. And I remember praying that night and just getting, sorry, makes me a little choked up, getting that reassurance that she would be okay. And so once I got that answer to my prayer, I thought, okay, I don't need to worry about this anymore. She will be fine.
This is typical of my wife, right? I mean, I just don't have that gift where, you know, you pray and you get that answer that's so sure that things will happen and be fine. This is not the first time in her life that this has happened, because something later that we might talk about later about my wife going through something, she also prayed and got that same feeling. So
yeah,
it's kind of an interesting thing. So, all right. So your sister, your parents drive there, probably got there the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good 16-hour trip from California to where you are in Idaho. And what happens with your sister? And
you know, the funny thing was, is my cousin had died in almost the exact same way about a year before this. So that was still fresh in all of our family, extended family's mind.
So then who was that? I don't even know. Because you have so many cousins that live in that area.
Yeah, it's like
the family grew up, like her dad and lots of these cousins and everyone in this area, when they kind of left and went to California. So every time you talk to cousins, who knows? I mean, this could be extended out.
It was.
Bazillion family members. Yeah. And so to me, I'm like, okay, which cousin are you talking about?
This is my second cousin.
Okay. All right.
She got hit by a car and died about the year before. So that was still fresh in everyone's mind. But I can remember my parents coming and being there, and I said, oh, she's going to be fine. And my dad just looked at me like, are you insane? And I said, nope, I prayed about it, and she's going to be fine.
So you're 19 years old, of course. Your dad's probably thinking, okay, Keely.
Yeah.
You know, you're just living in la-la land.
Yeah.
How do you keep so positive? Like, I know this is positivity plus, but how do you keep positive in such a difficult situation? Because I'd be like frantically probably beating my head against the wall, worried about, okay, my kid's going to die. And somehow you're able to find the time, pray about it, get the answer. And then from then on, you're like, I'm not worried about it anymore because I already know the answer. So what gives you that ability?
You know, for me personally, I feel like it's just a faith.
I know. I mean, so I think of my wife as she has this innate, it's like everyone's born with different gifts. Now, it's always hard to find your individual gift. I have difficult time finding any gift that I have. But, you know, for my wife, it's like this innate gift that she's always known, like that God lives and that, you know, if you pray, you're going to get answers. And because she always knows it happens. So it's like this faith that you know it's going to happen, so it does.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, okay, you know, I'm beating myself against that, you know, the wall with my head. And so I struggle with that. So your sister's there, your parents have arrived. And then what happens next? Like the recovery portion of it.
It took a long time for her to recover. It took about a year for her to fully recover. I take that back. I don't think she's ever fully recovered.
Oh, if you listen to them talk on the phone, you know she hasn't fully recovered.
But
I'm only kidding.
Yeah, but I, you know, it took a long time for her to recover.
Okay.
But eventually she got there, and you know, but it was one of those things that I knew she would be fine.
So tell me about the ice cream and toilet paper. There's a funny story.
When she was recovering, there was there was a lot of things that she really struggled with. And one of the things she struggled with was finding the correct words for what she wanted to say. So she had lost a whole bunch of weight. She only weighed like 90 pounds after.
Exercise freak. Her body is like solid.
Yeah. She was extremely healthy beforehand. Yeah. But we were trying to get her to gain some weight. So we were trying to get her to eat anything that she would eat. And one night we were in a room, in her hospital room, and I said, well, would you like something before I leave and go home for the night? Would you like something to eat? And she goes, yeah, I would. And I said, well, what is it? And she goes, I can't think of the name of it. And I said, well, what does it taste like? And she said, it tastes like toilet tissue.
So it does sound like she still has trouble, but it was really ice.
It was a milkshake.
She wanted a milkshake. So, okay. So this is the second time. So your family, your like immediate family, and then sometimes closer, first cousin relatives or uncles or aunts. Yeah. So this is the second time within your immediate family that something difficult happened. Yeah. They both survived.
Yeah.
So let's talk, just focus on your immediate
family. Okay.
So what's the next thing that happened?
The next one actually was when Kevin was going to college and I was pregnant with our second baby and my dad ended up with colon cancer. He was 42 and ended up with colon cancer when...
So is this like at the, you know, yeah. So like many men, right? Many men are like, never go to the doctor, right? Yeah. They're like, hey, I don't want to go there. I'll deal with it. I'll get over it. You know, one of the things her dad did is he actually owned a speedboat. And one time his legs got caught on the pipes and just like burnt his legs so bad that he just never went. And eventually he went to the doctor and the doctor says, it's good that you've arrived. Or, otherwise, they probably would have cut it.
Well, they said if he would have waited a day or two longer, they would have had to amputate.
Yeah. I mean, it was just he waited. That's how hard-headed their family is. And I think that stubbornness actually comes across all of them.
Yeah.
That they're stubborn in terms of they just don't die.
So, I don't know.
They want to survive.
Yes.
Okay, so talk about your dad and how that came about.
You know, I think it was one of those things that he just started feeling really bad and just kept putting it off.
So what does that mean? I mean, I've never dealt with cancer, so I don't even know what colon cancer and the feelings you really get.
I think he had diverticulitis anyway. So I think that he just thought that those symptoms that you have with that were the same symptoms that he had with colon cancer. So he just thought it was diverticulitis.
Okay.
But it just never went away and it never got better. So I think after a while, my mother kind of made him go to the doctor.
Yeah.
But that was something that, you know, it was before people were getting colonoscopies and it was before everything we understood so much more about it now than we did then. But I think that was something that he really struggled with. So,
but he was able to get through it.
Yes.
Was he in the hospital for a long time?
Not necessarily.
I mean, I can't see your dad being in the hospital any longer than he absolutely had to. Like he'd be ripping all the tubes off, the IV, and just walking out the door saying, I'm done, and then going back to work.
Exactly. And that's my dad. That's what
do. So but, you never, it wasn't
but
like
we
you,
weren't there.
Yeah. So you weren't there. You just were at, you were at school then. Mm-hmm. This went on. So you never really went home to see him during this. So it was a quick,
it was kind of
a turnaround.
You know, I think it was one of those things that I think they caught it early enough.
Okay.
That I know he had surgery for it.
No, and, there's no chemo.
No chemo.
Or no.
So I think they caught it early enough that. You know.
All right. So the next situation, I think, is your mother.
Yes.
Right. So this happened. I mean, how many years ago has it been? I mean,
that one was probably about 8 years ago.
Okay. So So who called? I mean, we did get the call.
My sister called.
And mm-hmm. I get, did I pick up, I guess?
No, I did.
So you picked up.
Yeah. It was funny because she called. It was probably about 10 o'clock at night.
Right. Which usually if you get calls at late at night, you're always like, okay, something's wrong. Like,
yeah.
Why? Now they're on the, you know, the West Coast. So there's a 2-hour time frame. Maybe that's what it was. But yeah. Okay. So tell us about your sister and her calling and what did you find out?
Yeah. So she had called and she said, and I kind of said, oh, kind of late, huh? You know, that you're calling, and was kind of teasing her. And she said, no, mom's had an accident. And I said, what? And my mother and my dad are huge outdoorsmen, and they love to go camping and to go snowmobiling, and they had four-wheelers. They loved to ride their four-wheelers. And they had lots of friends that did that with them. So they were up on the Montana-Idaho border with another couple. And my mom was the first one up a hill. They were going up this trail out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And they were going up this trail, and my mom was the first one on the four-wheeler. And she was going around a corner, and I guess the corner was kind of sharp, and there was some shale on the ground right where she was going. And she kind of lost control of her four-wheeler, and it went off a cliff and rolled down the cliff about 4 or 5 times. Now, when it rolled, she had a long-sleeved shirt on, which got attached to the handlebars, and she couldn't get her sleeve off the handlebars, so the four-wheeler was rolling over top of her as she was rolling down this hill. When she got to the bottom of it, the four-wheeler, of course, landed on top of her.
Now, four-wheelers weigh
a
lot.
Yeah,
so it's a four wheels. Right. And you got this huge, like, it's not like a kid one. This is
a great big, huge
significant size one. So even if it weighed, I don't know, 500 pounds or whatever they weigh, it's still a lot. Yeah.
So the other couple, the man from the other couple that was with them, took off for the ranger station, which was about an hour away.
So they're in the middle of nowhere.
They're in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. My dad gets down to the bottom of the hill with the woman from the other couple, and my mom is coughing up blood and she's spitting up blood, and he said she's a little unconscious and she's really struggling. And so my dad kind of picks her up and leans her against him because he's worried she's going to drown in her own blood.
So he's off to the ranger station. Now, it's an interesting thing that we found out later on that helicopters were already on their way. There were two.
Yeah.
Right? And they were coming to another accident that was somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And at that exact time, right, they didn't need two helicopters.
Yeah.
And somehow... was the guy who got to the ranger station, or was it like your dad finally got cell phone coverage by going up a hill, or how'd that work out?
It was the guy who got to the ranger station.
So an hour away, he finally got to the ranger station, and luckily a helicopter was coming to that area anyway for another accident that only needed one helicopter.
Yeah.
And as a result, the helicopter came to where they were.
Well, it didn't come to where they were.
Yeah, they had that because of the...
Yeah, because of the terrain, the helicopter couldn't land there.
Right.
So they had to take, for lack of a better description, kind of like a wagon that would kind of stabilize my mom so that they could bring her out.
Right.
So they had guys that were... EMTs go up with the Rangers to find my mom and bring her back. Now, mom was 72
when this happened. Yeah, so here's a 72-year-old woman rolls down the hill 5 or 6 times. You have a four-wheeler on top of her.
Yeah.
She's coughing out blood.
Yeah.
The guy has to go an hour away right? And you're lucky that you're like, she's surviving for the helicopter even to arrive.
Yeah.
And then the helicopter comes, they go into an area because where they are is too treacherous. Mm-hmm. They somehow get her to the helicopter and then they fly away.
Yeah.
And where's your dad?
And my dad can't get on the helicopter with them because there's not enough room. So he has to drive the 2.5 hour drive from their camp to get to the
hospital. So he left everything behind.
He took his pickup and the other couple took all their things.
So here you are driving 2.5 hours, having no idea what's happening with your spouse.
Yeah.
As she's up in the air, going like evac to the main hospital, major injuries, bleeding, coughing. Yeah. And so he shows up 2.5 hours later at the hospital.
Yeah.
So what?
And they told him that she had broken her back in 3 places, broken her neck in 2 places, and that most people that have the injury that she had, only like 1-5% are not quadriplegic.
Right. They're either dead
or they're a quadriplegic.
They're paralyzed.
Yeah.
And your mom ends up.
Yeah. And actually they did like a drug induced coma for a while so that she wouldn't move and wouldn't hurt everything that they fixed while she was in the hospital.
So what are you thinking at this time?
You know,
like, knowing you, that's why I'm asking this question. Like, are you praying at home?
Yeah.
Like, because you can't
definitely go. Yeah.
Right? And I can't even remember. Did you eventually fly out there?
I did eventually fly out.
How much further later?
But
like, this is after she came home.
This was after she came home.
Right.
And it was because my dad said, just wait till she comes home from the hospital. And then you can come and help.
So did you pray about your mother like you prayed about your sister? And did you get the same feeling?
You know, and I felt like, you know what? It's going to be hard. She's going to be okay. And obviously after an injury like that, you're never going to be the same as you were before.
Right.
But I think she's
right. So now, she's how old?
She's 78.
It's been eight years roughly. Yeah.
She was 70.
Well, yeah. And she, struggles in the sense of uncomfortableness, but she's walking.
She walks.
No wheelchair, drives, gets around.
Yeah.
So of course, leaning over and things like that aren't the same. But I mean, I just think, oh my gosh, what kind of blood is in these Erickson Sutton family members? Yeah. That allowed them to survive these, kind of difficult tragedies.
Did
you ever think about that? Like,
what
causes this to happen? Like,
the funny thing is that all of my life, when all these things happened and I would watch them happen, I kind of felt like my role was the one to take care of everybody else.
Well, you're the oldest of two, right?
Yeah.
So you only have yourself and your sister.
Mm-hmm.
They get along really well, which means one of these things, I talk to my family, even if I'm lucky, if I even call them, but maybe 5 minutes on the phone. I mean, she's on her phone every day almost with her sister for an hour or longer. So, it's a close-knit family of, mom, dad, and two daughters. So then, since the sister had an issue, your mom had an issue, your dad had an issue, of course, you didn't want to make sure you weren't part of this whole problem. So you decided to come up with your tragedy.
I would call it my own.
I don't know.
I wanted to come up
So something happened to my wife as well. So luckily on our 30th anniversary, so we've been married 37 years, we kind of went on a trip to Europe. It was the first time we ever really went outside the United States.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our trips on anniversary were like, we went to Charleston or something. That was like our first. Hey, this is Kevin again. It looks like on our last recording, it kind of ended off for whatever reason. We have no idea. 30 minutes because it says you can record up to 30 minutes in your browser. So it stopped and we had no idea. So we're going to finish off with the final story about my wife. And since we were saying her parents, it was her sister twice, mm-hmm. her dad once, her mom once, and now it's your turn. So I'd mentioned previously about, you know, we had just gone on our 30th to Europe, which was our first trip. We went to Spain and then France and then Italy, mm-hmm. And then even Dubrovnik as part of a cruise. And so we came back, and that was in November, the end of November. Mm-hmm. And then in March timeframe, right, we had just gone to our son Brandon's house in Virginia. We kind of slept on this mattress that was just horrible. And you wanted to die when you woke up the next morning. And my wife just wasn't feeling well. So we thought, I was thinking that it was just like the mattress. But
I thought so too.
Yeah. So what happened after that? You know, and what was going on in your the life, and how signs of something was like something was wrong?
We, like Kevin said, we had gone to Virginia and slept on the floor on this horrible, I think it was an air mattress, and it was extremely uncomfortable. And so I started to get like a lower kind of mid backache. And it just would not go away. It just was, and it wasn't like a, when I would get backaches, it wasn't like a normal backache that I would get. It was just, I don't know, it was just weird. And it wasn't so excruciating that I couldn't stand it, but it was just there.
And you couldn't even drink, right?
Well, like normally, you know, I would drink like 8 to 10 glasses of water every single day.
Right.
That was like my big thing, is I drank lots of water. But it got to the point where it took me all day long just to drink 16 ounces of water.
It was like there was something down in your chest or where
was it? It was like right in my diaphragm.
Right.
It felt like it would get stuck.
Right.
And it hurt really bad. It just felt like a big knot in my stomach.
Now, you know, remember earlier when we were talking about her dad and how her dad was burned on his legs and he would never go to the doctor? Well, you know, and I always said it was a man thing, but I hate to tell you, it's a woman thing too, especially with my wife. So as she goes through this story, you'll understand what I'm talking
about. Yeah. So it wasn't just drinking things. It was food too. I had a really hard time swallowing, and it got to the point where I could only eat 2 or 3 bites and then I would be done. In 1 month, without even trying, I lost over 10 pounds because I just couldn't eat anything and I couldn't drink anything.
Okay. So signs were happening,
yes,
which you weren't even telling me about.
Yeah.
You kind of kept them to yourself.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, things like pee and coffee, you know, like because people have talked about that, where I heard that from others. Like I was reading a book, and this guy, something Goggins, where he had exerted so much energy, it's like his kidneys were shutting down. Mm-hmm. So it was like peeing Coke, Coca-Cola. And you were having this same thing happen to you.
I was.
And then you were going to, you worked at the dentist office, mm-hmm. and you were at the dentist office.
Yeah.
Let's just.
Well, I think my eyes were turning kind of
yellow.
The whites of my eyes were getting yellow, and getting just kind of, I was looking really jaundiced. And the office manager and one of the hygienists cornered me in the work lounge, the employee lounge, and said, "Hey, we know you're sick." And I had been putting it off, thinking, you know what? I need to watch my grandkid this day. I need to do this. I need to do that. I don't have time to go to the doctor. I know I need to go, but I just don't have time. And so they cornered me in the employee lounge and they said, "We're going to rearrange your schedule tomorrow. We don't care what we have to do, but you're going to the doctor." And I was like, no, I'll be fine. I really will. And they were like, "No, you're going tomorrow." So the next day I went to the doctor and I said,
Did you go directly to the, you went to the doctor. Okay.
Yeah. Went to the doctor and I said, "You know, I'm really having a hard time swallowing. I'm having a hard time eating. I've lost like 10, over 10 pounds and I haven't even tried. And she said, do you have a backache? And I said, yeah, I do. And she said, and what about when you urinate? What does it look like? And I said, she said, is it really dark? And I said, yeah. And she started asking me all these questions, and every question that she asked me, I would say yes to. And she started to look really, she started to get a look on her face that was really concerning. And they did some blood work and took a urine sample, and I went home.
Oh, they didn't send you directly to the hospital? Because I thought your reading on some sort of scale was off the charts.
It was. My Bilirubin scale was, yeah. But she sent me home, and later that night, it was probably about 7:30 at night, she called. And she said she had talked to Dr. Brody, who was my regular gastroenterologist. And she said, this was on a Wednesday. And she said, Friday morning at 9 o'clock at UNC, you have an appointment for an endoscopy. And I said, I can't go Friday morning. I have something else scheduled. I can't. I have things going on. She goes, no, you're going on Friday. You have no choice. You're going. So we went to the hospital Friday morning, and they did an endoscopy. They did two different kinds. They did one where they did a biopsy, and the other one, they just stuck a camera down my throat.
Okay. And so they came after the
endoscopy.
It was over. They told us what
that,
they
that
thought it
there
was
a be. Mass.
There was
in
a mass
in my pancreas.
And of course, I have no idea. I'm like, okay, you know, everything's fine. I'm oblivious to what's really being said. And my wife already knows it's cancer.
Yeah.
And
well,
or you thought it was, or
yeah,
but I was like, okay, because he made it sound like, yeah, we're just putting in this little thing, we'll be fine. And I'm like, great. So they had actually opened the path because of the tumor was actually closed.
Well,
they
put two stents.
Yeah, a stent in so it would keep the flow. So the jaundice would actually go away.
Well, they put a stent in my pancreatic duct and in my bile duct. So that, because what was happening was the bile was backing up into my system, and that was causing me to be jaundiced. And then we were supposed to meet with the surgeon, I think it was the next week.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and met with the surgeon, and he said.
But did we go back before the surgeon or after? Okay.
So we went and met with the surgeon, and the surgeon basically said, you know, we were in there, the intern had come in and told us, you know, that I'd need to have surgery and explained all the surgery and everything. And then the doctor came in and he went back over the same things that the intern went over. And then he said to me, he said, you know, you have cancer, don't you? And I said, yes, I know. And Kevin said, whoa, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
So what do you mean cancer? I mean, and of course, you know, but I said, what percentage did he say?
He said, Kevin said, how sure are you that that's what this is? And he said, I'm 99% sure that that's what it is. So you said... You mean there's still a chance, a 1% chance that she doesn't have cancer?
You know, it's sad that what's going through my mind is how much this is going to cost. You know, so that's the other thing is like, I'm like thinking, you know, what's my deductible?
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm thinking it's like $100,000. I don't know why, because we've never really had to use our insurance very often. So.
Yeah.
I am like, I've always been concerned about money. You know, it's just like, I don't know, in my DNA. So I'm like frantic trying to think of, okay, I know my wife's got cancer, but I'm like, okay, what's it going to cost? And how are we going to cover this? And how are we going to like, are we going to have to sell our house? And so I actually, after the appointment, I think, I either went back to work, I went directly to the health expert. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, sat down with her and I said, I just need to know, my wife, you know, has cancer. What's my annual deductible? And she's like, 8,000 or something.
Family deductible.
Family deductible. Like, okay, thank you. You know, it was just like this relief, like, all right, at least we can deal with 8,000, not 100,000 in my mind, or 50,000 or whatever.
But you know, the miracle in that whole thing was that the October before you had changed our health benefits.
Yes. So we had actually changed our health. We was always, you know, did the normal health plan. So we changed to the high deductible savings plan. And for some reason, the high deductible savings plan had a lower annual deductible, like the out-of-pocket maximum, than the normal one did.
Yeah.
So by making that change in October, that last selection for January for the coming year ended up benefiting us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, you know, think about the gratuity or like how that kind of worked itself out.
Yeah, it did.
So, okay, so you find out you have cancer.
Yeah.
What happened between that time and then?
But the funny thing was, is the day that we found out, we came home. And I remember saying, you know, the car ride home was really quiet. It was really quiet. And I remember getting in the house and I said, well, I said, I need to go to Target and get birthday cards. And you looked at me like, you're insane. You just found out you have pancreatic cancer, which was what I had. And you're thinking about birthday cards. And I said, do you want to go with me? And you said, no.
Like, I want to go look at birthday cards and we're finding out she just got cancer. Like, that really matters.
So
why did you do that?
I don't know. I think I wanted some sense of normalcy or something. But I can remember going to the store and walking through the store and looking at other people and thinking, no one in the store knows what just happened to me. How many other people in the store have had the exact same thing happen or something very similar happen to them, and no one would ever know it? Because we, you know, put this face on that we don't want anybody to see what's going on inside. And that was something that really was a huge eye-opener for me, was that one instance.
All right. So from that time, we had the next appointment, right, that we were supposed to see with the doctor.
Yeah.
But between the time, something else happened.
Yeah. The two ducts that they, I mean, the two stents they put in failed.
So we were back in the hospital on a Saturday. I think it was a Saturday morning.
Yeah. The funny thing was that the doctor had said to us, he said, look, okay, this is the deal. If something happens and you need to go to the doctor, you come directly to my office if it's during the week. He goes, do not go to the emergency room. Do not go to your regular hospital. You come directly here. I said, okay. He goes, if it's on a Saturday, you need to be there before 10 o'clock in the morning.
Because all the crazies come out.
Yeah, because that's when all the crazies come out.
So we were there actually at 10, in the, before 10, and actually we were there until midnight, and actually we were admitted to a room. So here we're ready to leave because we're like, this is nuts.
Yeah.
So we were admitted.
Yeah.
And why? And then what happened after? I don't even remember. So we were admitted. You were in the room, and then when was the actual operation that was going to happen? The official, Whipple. So we find out my wife has pancreatic cancer, right? So, luckily, I would say, is if you have surgery done to you or the Whipple, which is kind of like heart surgery with your pancreas, and like you get rerouted, rechanged, your chances of survival are greater than if nothing were to happen. Yeah. So for us, it was, you know, it was like, wow, we have a chance.
Yeah.
Right. So at the time, you're thinking how, I mean, here you are finding out you have pancreatic cancer. Now you have to tell your family, which we hadn't done that yet. But you all of a sudden recognize how grateful you are about life and how lucky mm-hmm. you were just to be with each other for so long. And you're like, for 30 years, we had a chance to stay, be together, or 30. Yeah, it was 30 years yeah. or 30, almost 31. Yeah. And so we were like, just grateful. And so mm-hmm. I think people are probably thinking, why are you, you know, here you are, your wife has pancreatic cancer and you're grateful.
Yeah.
Because I said, if she were to pass away, at least we've had this time together.
Yeah.
So you find out we really have pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
And now you want to have to tell people, like our kids.
I have to tell our kids. Have to tell my family, my, you know, my parents and my sister.
Yep.
And, you know, the funny thing is I think about it now, and I can remember telling my mom and dad and my sister, but I don't even remember telling our kids. I know I did, but I don't remember it.
But nobody, like everyone was in denial, like myself, you know, nobody really wanted to talk about it. So once they heard about it, nothing.
Yeah.
And even when she told her parents and then they told like cousins, I mean, the cousins were like distraught.
Yeah.
And people calling was the worst thing that could have happened because they were all telling you about, oh, the chances of survival. We're like, none. Like, like we need to hear that. We're looking at
we already knew that.
Yeah, but we're looking. We don't need people to remind us the chances of survival were that small.
Yeah.
So, all right. So then eventually we...
You know...
So we come, let's just say we come to the surgery.
Well, but before all of that...
Yeah, I know. We have like...
I know.
Unfortunately, we have like 13 minutes to tell the whole story. Okay. We've
but
already gone
that,
through...
You know, going back to what happened before... there was a point before where I was really struggling with this whole thought.
So was this like before you were going to go through
before
surgery?
Before my surgery.
Okay.
I knew you were coming home.
Yep.
And I thought, I can't do this by myself. I can't. And so of all places, I went into our little half bathroom downstairs and said a prayer. And I said, you know what? Heavenly Father, I can't do this by myself. And I'm just going to give it to you because I can't do this. And immediately I got that calming sense, that reassurance. And I thought, okay, let's do this. It's going to be rough, but I'll be okay. And from that moment on,
which is interesting.
I
so
knew I was going to be okay.
Remember earlier in the first episode, since this is the second, is she did the same thing with her sister and got that feeling she'd be fine. Now, I honestly always thought when she got this second feeling here for pancreatic cancer that she would be fine. That meant she would survive.
Yeah.
But
and that's
is yeah. that what you thought?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought, okay.
Right. So here she is, you know, before we even go for surgery, she's already prayed about it and had the faith to realize that everything would be fine one way or another.
Yeah.
So if you go to surgery, which it means you have a chance, you have to be in surgery for at least 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And if they come out before the 2 hours, it's roughly, there's just nothing they can do. So I'm there with several other, you know, some of her friends and I'm working, like I'm just got my computer out. We were there at like 6 a.m.
Yeah.
The surgery begins and I'm just working. I'm just like, okay, an hour's gone, you know, 2 hours gone. Maybe it was 3 and nobody came out. And I finally contacted her parents and said, yep, we've gotten through past the, at least the 2 hour mark. We should be okay. And then, you know, it took, I don't even know how long it took, but the surgery was all day, you know, or felt all day.
Yeah.
And the surgeon comes out and tells me, yeah, your wife had some weird little thing in there, but that's fine. You know, not many people have this strange routing of what was it, like a blood vessel or some sort of weird.
There was something that normally he has to concoct one somehow.
But somehow she had two of them. And so she gets out of surgery. My wife's a talker, right? You can tell, right? Her and her sister can't stop. So I get into the recovery room and here she is just talking away at the nurse watching her and telling her about all these things. And I'm like, I can't believe it. You came out of surgery and you're still talking. And she can't even remember that at all.
No, I don't.
So finally we went through to a room, which you're going through the dungeon of the hospital. Like the bottom floor, making your way up to the room. And of course, she's admitted. And, you know, now she's like in her room and they're giving her all these drugs and she's feeling great. And so one of the big things was for her was she had to walk. And there was like, you know, people putting on the board how much they're walking and their times. And my wife's like a real trooper.
No, so, well, you could only be on the board if you walked so many laps,
yes,
which equaled a mile.
Yep. And so
I said, I want to be on that board.
So you were on the board,
all
the time, walking all the time. And we were supposed to be there how many days? Like, which
was
the estimate?
10 to 14 days.
10 to 14. We ended up leaving after
7
days. So my wife was like, you know, what is it? An overachiever.
Yeah.
And so they finally take out the drugs.
Yeah.
And
that was rough.
Yep. And that was rough.
Rough day.
And then we drove her home, and I decided to take the back way because I thought I wanted to do it, like take the slow approach, not the highway. Well, we hit bumps and she felt everything, and her parents were there, and just, let's just say we had a rough trip home.
Yeah.
And then it took, you know, now this is just finishing surgery.
Yeah.
You still had chemo to go through
and
radiation,
then more chemo,
which took
nine months.
9 months. And, you know, during this time of 9 months, you know, we belong to a church, and, you know, they asked for volunteers and people were.
You know, I think that through all of this, there were some really amazing blessings. One of them was that I went to chemo every week. Someone always showed up. I never knew who it was going to be.
Yeah.
But they always showed up on time and they always acted like it was the greatest pleasure that they ever had was to take me to chemo.
Yeah.
Radiation, I went every day for a month and someone came every single day, picked me up, and once again acted like it was a party, you know.
But that has all to do with my wife. And
no, I think I just
have
great
but it's
friends.
Just the it's just the her disposition is positive, right? Mm-hmm. So through this whole period of time, you know, you would think that, you know, people would get negative, like turn. Sometimes people are angry with God because of this. My wife never was that way at all. She was always positive. And she thought, well, what choice do you have?
Well, and besides that, you know, when you go to, I think going to chemo and to radiation and things can be such humbling experiences. Anyway, it was for me.
Right.
Because I would go, there would be people, someone had to push them in a wheelchair. They looked like death. And I think for the most part, I never looked that way. I looked tired.
Yeah.
But I never lost my hair, which was huge, which was the thing, honestly, I was most worried about.
She was most worried about her hair.
But I never lost my hair. I would look at people in the room and I would think, you know, there's someone here with me all the time that can take care of me.
And some people had nobody. They were all by themselves in the chemo room and crying and, you know, just.
And it was, for me, it was really humbling because I knew that there was always someone worse off than me. And I know that there's people that get angry with God about certain things, but that never even occurred to me that was a choice. That wasn't even something that I thought about. And the most amazing thing was to see the blessings that it not only gave to us, to me, to you and I, and to our immediate family, but to our church family, to my cousins, to my friends, to people that we knew. I think it blessed a lot more people than just us.
So when it was all said and done, my wife is telling people what a blessing having pancreatic cancer was.
In
not only
ways,
to her
really
life,
was.
But to others.
Yeah, I think.
And they look at her and think, like her dad, are you on drugs? Like, like when earlier,
are you crazy?
Yeah, like you think your sister's going to be fine, you know? And here she is. She goes through it, and so a lot of times she'll ask me. She goes, "Oh, you should tell me. You were so good. You were great." I'm like, you know, if you've ever gone through a situation like my mom had depression, you know, throughout her life. And when you went to visit somebody who's depressed, the whole time you're there, you're like, have to be positive continually. And so when you're done through the day, you're just completely just wasted, like spent. And so you're like, you know, in the dumps when after you've left. And so with my wife, though, from a pancreatic cancer perspective, she was never like negative, right? So it was always you come home, she was tired, she slept a lot,
I did sleep well.
But never negative. So when I got home, it was like nothing had really changed other than the fact that she was just finished going through chemo and, you know, surgery and chemo and radiation. Yeah. And nothing had changed to me. And so I never felt like it was really that much of a challenge because I didn't have to really change much. I mean, you know, a funny thing is when she finished coming back from the hospital, she couldn't eat anything. She didn't want to eat anything.
Yeah.
And not that this is a plug for, you know, Chick-fil-A, but the only thing she would eat was chicken minis.
Yeah.
And so every day, not every day, but every periodically, we'd go in the morning just to get chicken minis because she'd eat them and she just like loved them.
I would eat one,
but she loved it. And so that was kind of like our way of eating was by going to Chick-fil-A for chicken minis.
Yeah.
But anything else you want to say? I mean, we only have, you know the a couple more minutes.
Okay. For me, honestly, I think that through that whole experience, and it's been, honestly, I think that I've always looked at things this way, but you have to look more for the blessings that you have in life. Because it's like the song, Count Your Many Blessings, name them one by one, that you have to look for those blessings because we're blessed so much more than we can ever imagine. And it's really hard to feel sorry for yourself when you count your blessings.
So that's it. So you got to hear a lot about my wife's family and, you know, specifically my wife. So hopefully this has been beneficial to you and positive and positivity plus is our podcast. And I really hope you enjoyed just kind of our discussion. It actually, for me, helped bring back, you know, lots of memories that we had along the way, but I mean, kind of in the end, we were very fortunate and blessed that everything turned out well. I mean, it's been over five years mm-hmm. now since her last chemo treatment. And so we're hoping that we're, you know, survive cancer warriors. And my wife hates the word survivor, but we're, you know, she's a cancer warrior. And so, you know, we're just all we can say is we're lucky and thankful, and we hope you enjoy it. Have a good day. Bye-bye.